this week I wanted to talk to you. Go ahead, Mr. Preacher. Continue our conversations about stories, because there's so much power in a story. There's so much that's involved in a story. It's a page turner. It's something that we envelop ourselves in. In fact, Pastor Jason sang a song that talked about how our story becomes our song. It's the way that we worship sometimes, isn't it? We sing and we affiliate with certain songs because we attach ourselves, because that's the song we sing when we go through a chapter in a story. Last week, we started a conversation, go ahead, Miss Rachel, about this guy named Jeremiah. And the Bible tells us this in verse 5. The Bible tells us that God called him and formed him in the womb and appointed him and gave him a job and a specific thing he was supposed to do before he was ever even on this earth. The Bible continues later on in verse 9. He says this, that the Lord reaches down and he puts his very words in Jeremiah's mouth. And he says, you're going to be my mouthpiece, because we learned last week that no one was hearing from God at this point. Jeremiah's message for the next 40 years is going to be this message of hope and despair. It's going to be this message of there's judgment coming, but there's also a promise on the other side of that. And no one was hearing from God except Jeremiah. And the Bible tells us this in verse 10. God gives us this promise in Jeremiah. He says that I'm going to uproot and I'm going to tear down and I'm going to destroy and I'm going to overthrow. But I'm also going to build and I'm going to plant. And today, in the famous words of Paul Harvey, you're going to get the rest of the story. I like Jeremiah. And this is just a small little parenthesis of the life of Jeremiah. I mean, we're hitting the very deep surface. I mean, we're going to fast forward 40 years from this moment in verse 10 to where we pick up in Jeremiah chapter 32. The difference here is Jeremiah has been found to be a prisoner. The king is tired of hearing Jeremiah talk. Now, this is what's interesting. The king is imprisoned Jeremiah in his inner court because he thought that's the place where he can do no harm. And yet you have to understand that Jeremiah has lasted 4 different kings. Same message all the way through for the last 40 years. Judgment is coming. Babylon will destroy us. You better get ready. And every king has opposed Jeremiah and every king has been ousted. The only thing constant in this entire equation is Jeremiah. So we pick up in chapter 32, we find him in imprisonment. And this is what the Bible says. It says, now this is the word of the Lord that came to Jeremiah in the 10th year of Zedekiah, king of Judah, which was the 18th year of Nebuchadnezzar. The army of the king of Babylon was then besieging Jerusalem, and Jeremiah the prophet was confined in the courtyard of the guard in the royal palace. Let's pause right there. I want you to get the picture. The entire city is surrounded by Babylon. No one's coming in, no one's coming out. The only instance in chapter 32 is there's a brief little pause between their invasion, and they pause and they open up one of the western flanks because Egypt has come to attack them from behind. And so Babylon stops their siege for a moment in chapter 32 and takes part of their army to go defeat Egypt. And while this is happening, this is all the events occurring. And so Jeremiah finds himself as a political prisoner. And then we continue. Go ahead, Miss Rachel. The Bible tells us this. And now Zedekiah, the king of Judah, had imprisoned him there. And he said to him, why do you prophesy as you do? You say, this is what the Lord says. I'm about to give you this city into the hands of the king of Babylon, and he will capture it. Zedekiah is upset. Why do you keep saying these things? Why do you keep being negative? And this is what he continues. Go ahead. In verse 4, the Bible tells us this. Now, Zedekiah, the king of Judah, this is also Jeremiah speaking. He's paraphrasing. Will not escape the Babylonians, but will certainly be given into the hands of the king of Babylon. And he will speak with him face to face and see him with his own eyes. He will take Zedekiah to Babylon, where he will remain until I deal with him, declares the Lord. And if you fight against the Babylonians, you will not succeed. And this is the king, and he's upset with Jeremiah. And he's like, why do you keep saying these negative things about me? And why do you keep making these vague prophecies that haven't come true? They're not going to come true. I like Jeremiah's response, because it doesn't make any sense at all. So the king is there. He's berating them. He's trying to cause an argument. And look what Jeremiah does. You ready? Go ahead. The Bible says this. Jeremiah says, the word of the Lord came to me. Hanamel, the son of Shalom, your uncle, is going to come to you and say, buy my field at Anatoth, because as the nearest relative, it is your right and duty to buy it. Zedekiah is on one end. Zedekiah is ready to throw down. He's ready to fight. Why do you keep opposing me? Why do you keep saying this? Why do you got to be negative? Why? And Jeremiah's response, I think, makes Zedekiah look a lot like this. I mean, it's this moment where all of a sudden you're like, huh? Because Jeremiah just speaks out and says, by the way, the God told me that my cousin's going to come in and he's going to try to sell me a piece of land. It makes no sense whatsoever. It baffles the king so much that the king actually leaves. He's angry. He's upset. Got no answer from Jeremiah. And then this is where I want to start today. The Bible tells us this. Right after that incursion, then just as the Lord had said, my cousin Hanamel came to me in the courtyard of the guard and said, buy my field at Anatoth in the territory of Benjamin. Since it's your right to redeem it and possess it, buy it for yourself. And I knew that was what the word of the Lord. So I bought the field at Anatoth for my cousin Hanamel and weighed out for him 17 shekels of silver. Now there's a lot to unpack here. And you're like, how? I promise you. The first thing I want you to notice about this passage is this. Go ahead. The absolute confidence of Jeremiah. Who buys real estate when everything is literally falling apart? Who buys land when the entire Babylonian army has encircled your city and is about to destroy it? Jeremiah does. The confidence that he acts in, this way that he looks at God and he knows this is what God said, this is what I'm supposed to do. So this royalty comes in and he begins to oppose him. And why do you keep questioning me? And why do you keep saying this and saying that? And Jeremiah responds the way that God tells him to respond. Hey, I'm supposed to buy this piece of land. And Jeremiah utterly confuses him. And there's this ultimate confidence. Why is Jeremiah confident? Because God told him this. Go ahead. In verse 15 of that chapter, God says this. This is what the Lord of the hosts, the God of Israel, says. Houses and fields and vineyards will again be bought in the land. It's this moment of emblematic certainty that God's going to do something. Even when everything looks dark, even when everything looks just absolutely destructive, guess what? God tells me to do something, I'm going to go do it. Well, why? Because Jeremiah understood this. Go ahead. In Isaiah, he had this understanding. For I, the Lord your God, will hold your right hand. It is I who say to you, fear not, for I am the one who helps you. Jeremiah knew, he understood this embodiment of what Isaiah prophesied all those many years earlier. This idea that even though the army surrounds me, even though the city is falling apart, when God says to go do something, guess what? We better go do it. I learned this at an early age in my ministry. I watched this couple who struggled with having kids, and they were old. No offense to old people, but they were old. And I watched in a church service as this preacher walked up to them in the altar and told them, go buy a car seat because you're about to have a baby. As a young staff member, you know, you ever been in those altar moments where you're praying, you got one eye open all of a sudden? Like you're looking around? I did. He said that and I went, oh. Like, I don't know. They're old. They've been through in vitro. They've been through everything. But you know what they did? They followed the word of the Lord. Even though they were old, and even though all the doctors said it couldn't happen, they went and bought a car seat. And then guess what? They had triplets. They had to buy two more. And I was like, ooh. And at that moment, I was like, okay, Lord, okay. Because here's what ends up happening. Sometimes in our lives, isn't it? When we're all surrounded by the circumstances of life, when things don't really make sense, when things are trenched in, and when the enemy's all against us, and we think, this is it, there's no hope. I promise you, when God gives you a way out, take it. And so what God said to Jeremiah, he said, in the midst of all this tragedy, in the midst of everything that's happening, go buy this piece of land, because it's emblematic of what I'm going to do for the future. It's so important. You see, the Bible tells us this. Go ahead, Miss Rachel. The Bible tells us in Psalm 121, verse 7 and 8, that the Lord's going to keep us from harm. He's going to watch over your life. He'll watch over your coming and your going, both now and forevermore. The absolute confidence in this passage of Jeremiah. It doesn't make sense to buy real estate in the middle of a war, and yet here he is, because God called him to do so. But what I also like about this passage, what I want you to glean from it, is this idea. Go ahead. It's this idea, the promise. You ever promise your kids something? You ever promise your kids something and knowing you're not going to fulfill it? It's like when they want to go to the park and you give them the famous parental phrase, we'll see, or maybe. And then the kids get smart, so they hold you to it. They hold you to their word. The pinky promise is sacred. This is what God does in this passage. It's incredible. Because when God speaks, God begins to speak and he's going to bring it to pass. Now, I want you to understand what this looks like. Jeremiah describes it in verse 24 of chapter 32. Go ahead. He says this. He says, you see how the siege ramps are built up all over the city. They're getting ready to take the city. Because of the sword and the famine and the plague, the city will be given into the hands of the Babylonians who are attacking it. Speaking to God, he said, what you said is about to happen. Now we'll see it. We're only about 6 months away, by the way, of the walls completely falling and Babylon carrying everyone out in captivity. We're only 6 months away from the siege that will take Zedekiah. They'll murder his sons in front of him. They'll put his eyes out and carry him back as a political prisoner to Babylon as a trophy. We're 6 months away from Nebuzaradan, the leader of the armies, to walk in and find Jeremiah imprisoned in the palace, to free Jeremiah and say, I know what your God told you, and we're not supposed to touch you. And so you get three options. You can stay here and live in Jerusalem in the rubble. You can come back to me, with me to Babylon. You can live in my palace. You'll be my friend the rest of your life. I'll take care of you. Or he takes the seal of the king, Nebuchadnezzar, and gives it to Jeremiah and says, you take this, and the world is yours. You can go wherever you want. No one will ever touch you. The choice is yours. We're 6 months away from this promise. Jeremiah understood this. He paints this picture he wants you to see. The city is under siege. There is no hope. And yet he continues. You ready? Verse 25, he says this. And though the city will be given into the hands of the Babylonians, you, sovereign Lord, say to me, buy the field with silver and have the transaction witnessed. Do you hear the irony of that statement? Do you hear the tone that Jeremiah says? It's like he's working it out for himself. God, I know what you said. I know what I'm supposed to do, but it makes absolutely no sense to do it. It's this nice little phrase. You ever tell God sometimes what you're thinking? Like his ways aren't so much higher than our ways. Like his thoughts are not so much higher than our thoughts, but we're going to give God our opinion of it. Like he doesn't already know the blueprints of everything. And this is where Jeremiah is, because it's a very human understanding. It's this idea, God, do you really understand what I'm doing here? We're about to be overrun, and yet you tell me to go buy some property. Why? Because this is what God says. You ready? In verse 15, he promised, there's going to come a day when Israel's going to come back, and there's going to be houses, and there's going to be fields, and there's going to be vineyards, and they're all going to be bought again in this land. And then notice in verse 27, he says this, am I the Lord, the God of all mankind? Is anything too hard for me? Notice the promise God makes to him. Verse 15, he says, there's going to come a day when people are going to come back and they're going to buy the land again. There's going to be a day where people are going to come back, they're going to inhabit it. There's going to be a day when there's going to be houses built and children playing and everything's going to be great. There's going to be blue skies and everything's going to be good. And then in verse 27, he reminds Jeremiah, don't forget who put this all together in the first place. You know, maybe sometimes in our life, I think that we often will take a look at a problem and forget to tell our problem about our God. It's not that we don't have faith. And it's not that we don't walk in the right frame. It's just that sometimes we get so caught up in the moment that we forget the promises of God. Jeremiah didn't forget as much as he was reminding God of this. This doesn't really make a lot of sense. Because there's this great verse, go ahead, in chapter 29 of Jeremiah, and it says this, that I know the plans I have for you. This is God speaking to Jeremiah. And he says, plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future. Then you will call on me and come and pray to me, and I'll listen to you. You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. I will be found by you, declares the Lord. My friend, this morning, maybe you find yourself in similar situations. Your city is surrounded. Everything looks dark and bleak on the inside. You don't see a way out. Perhaps this verse is the verse for you today. Because God gives you some incredible promises that he says this. He said he's going to prosper me. He said he's not going to allow any harm to come to me. He grants me hope and a future. He'll listen to me, and he will allow me to find him when I seek him. These are all huge prayers for you. And I don't know what you're going through. I don't know what situation you're carrying with you right now, whether that's health or that's finance or that's family, whatever it may be. Maybe you need to take this verse and unpack it for your situation. Maybe you need to take these promises and begin to speak them specifically to that mountain that's in front of you. Maybe you need to remind your problem that your God still reigns, that he made a promise to you, that he's going to see you through it. And as we begin to speak life into that situation, watch what God does. Watch how he begins to open up doors and make ways where there were no ways. Watch him to inspire hope and goodness and strength and peace, all because we get our eyes set on the right thing. And finally today, the thing that I like most about this passage is this. Go ahead. It's this idea, the precision of Jeremiah. This is something I didn't notice before, but later on I stopped and I read it, and I began to understand why. When you go back and you read this passage, it's in chapter 32, I encourage you to do so. When he buys the piece of land, it's incredibly annotated legally. He wants to make sure that everything is done right. Now, if you've ever dealt with a lawyer or if you've ever bought a car, everything is literally signed and documented. Everything is away. And oftentimes the car salesman will even say something like, time to sign your life away. Jeremiah was meticulous, following God's instruction about what to do about this piece of land. The Bible tells us this. In chapter 9, the Bible says that, so I bought the field at Anatoth for my cousin Hanamel, and I weighed out for him 17 shekels of silver. I signed and sealed the deed. I had it witnessed, and I weighed out the silver on the scales, meaning they weighed out in front of them. I took the deed of purchase, the sealed copy containing the terms and conditions, as well as the unsealed copy. Go ahead, next verse. And he says this, and I gave this deed to Baruch, which is his assistant, the son of Neriah, the son of Mahaseiah, in the presence of my cousin Hanamel and the witnesses who had signed the deed, and all the Jews sitting in the courtyard of the guard. In their presence I gave Baruch these instructions. This is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says. Take these documents, both the sealed and the unsealed copies of the deed of purchase, put them in a clay jar so they're going to last a long time. These are verses that I think sometimes I overlooked until I began to really take some time and unpack those. Notice what he does. He takes the sealed copy, signed and unsigned, unsealed, and he wants everybody to see that he had bought this purchase of land. So he goes out into the courtyard and he holds it up for everyone to witness. I bought this property. This property is mine. No one else can have it. It's mine. And then he gives the property deeds to his assistant in front of everyone else and says, take the deeds, both the sealed and the unsealed, wrap them up, put them inside a jar, keep them safe. They're important. Now, what's interesting is when we begin to dig a little bit about who his cousin was and about the piece of land, we begin to understand just a little bit of difference. You see, what ends up happening in this land, and what I like, is this idea that Jeremiah has to rebuy land that he already owns. You see, his family owned the land at Anatoth. The field that he owned was his uncle's, which was probably sold to the uncle at some point to make ends meet because of the fall of that priestly line. We read about that last week. What's interesting is he is the one who owns the land originally. The land was sold to his uncle and he has to rebuy it again. He's double purchased it. It's his. Signed, sealed, and delivered. It's my piece of land. Now the Bible tells us in Leviticus they have this thing called the year of Jubilee. And every 50 years, anything that was sold, any piece of property that would revert to a family member or a cousin or a brother, everything gets put back on its head. Everything resets itself. Meaning, that Jeremiah has just paid 17 shekels of silver for a piece of land he already owns. Why? Well, to understand that, you got to see what it looks like. You ready? It's a page turner. It looks a lot like this. And if you want to come up and play, Jason, I'm getting ready to close. It looks like that. This is modern day Anatoth, right outside the city of Jerusalem. Looks a lot like that. I don't know if I'd pay 17 pieces of silver for it, but I don't know. I don't know anything about property. This is the field of Al-Qadamah. Now, that's a big word. We don't know what that means. But here's the deal. This place is the place that Jeremiah purchased. It had this incredible deposits of red clay. Now, in Alabama, we understand red clay. Do you remember? You ever get red clay in a shirt? What happens when red clay gets in a shirt? It stains. It ain't coming out, right? Red clay is also used to make incredible pottery. And so in this field that Jeremiah buys in Anatoth, has these huge clay deposits. They look a lot like this. Go ahead. And what happens is, this is a modern day picture with clay deposits. You dig down and around the clay, and then you remove the clay so that it can be sold to potters and so that it can be sold for pottery and masonry and everything else that goes in between. And what ends up happening is these are naturally occurring but not naturally reoccurring, which means that once that resource is gone, it's no longer there. And so as we've dug down and as these clay deposits are going away, you're going to have these huge divots these huge ripple effects. So over the course of the next 600 years, the field that Jeremiah buys gets renamed, called the Potter's Field. Now, you may not understand what the Potter's Field is. What the Potter's Field is has huge implications for you and for me. If we were to go to the Potter's Field today, you would find that all the clay deposits are gone and there's all these little fragments of pottery because the Potter's Field became a place of refuse. Potters and masonry, when we broke a clay jar, we would take it out to that field. We would throw it out onto the field. Why? Because the rains would reclaim that clay sometimes and put it back into the earth and recreate those deposits. But what ended up happening is in the time of Jesus, this field was used as a mass burial site for foreigners, non-Jews, people who didn't belong. So on this field, you've got this broken clay, all these fragmented pieces. No hope of ever being whole again. You've got these great big holes and divots. And you've got these graves of people who don't belong. You can't be buried the Jewish way. You get thrown out into this field. Now, why is that important? The Bible tells us this. In Matthew, chapter 27, you have this guy named Judas who betrays Jesus for 30 pieces of silver. And the night that Jesus is betrayed, after he's crucified, Judas comes back to the priest and says, I don't want this money. I betrayed innocent blood. And so he throws the money back to the priest, and the priest say, what's that got to do with us? That was your choice, not ours. Go away. So the Bible says that Judas runs off and he hangs himself. The chief priests have a conversation with each other. Jesus is now dead. And they say, what do we do with this money? It's against the law to put it back into the treasury since it's a blood money. And so they decided to use it to buy the Potter's Field as a burial place for foreigners. You're like, what does that mean for me? It's simple. Today is all about this word for you. Hope. You see, 600 years before that, you have this guy named Jeremiah, and God tells him, go buy a piece of land. Because I got a plan for that piece of land. 600 years later, that land is going to be so important for you and me. Because it's a place where brokenness is put back together. It's a place where everything that's been used up in our lives gets refilled. It's a place where all of my sins are poured out onto the ground and Jesus dies on the cross and says, I bought you not only once, but twice. Jeremiah got a small little keyhole glimpse of the plan of God in Jesus. Go buy this field that you already own. Go rebuy it because I want you to understand what I'm about to do for the people all these many years later. You see, God owns all of us. He created us. The Bible tells us that he forms us. Psalm 119 says that he knits us literally cell by cell. He puts us together. He owns us. And yet he sent his son a payment for all of the sin that we've created. And he rebuys us. And emblematically, Judas throws the money back because the money used to betray Jesus is the same field that gets bought that takes in all the foreigners and all the broken pieces and all the emptiness. Because God had a plan 600 years before to tell Jeremiah, go buy this field. It's important. You see, God's in the details of everything in your situation. He hasn't forgot about you. He has a plan for you, a plan to prosper you, a plan to give you hope and a future. And even when everything is around and it's deadly and everything looks just absolutely done, God still has a plan. And today I stopped by just to tell you this, there's hope. It may not make sense now. I know it didn't make sense to Jeremiah. Go buy this piece of land that you already own, even though you're probably not going to get to live on it, even though you're not going to get to make any of the clay pottery. Even though you're not going to be able to make any resources off of it, go buy this piece of land. And he's obedient to do that. Why? Because God had a plan. I want to show you this place. This is how I want to end today. This is not a vacation spot. Not a place you want to hang out. This is the most dry and barren piece of property on earth. The Atacama Desert is found in South America on the Pacific side, off the coast of Chile, not a place we really hang out with. Its annual rainfall is 15 millimeters a year. It is the absolute worst place to ever be stranded because there are no water wells. There is no vegetation. There is no life outside of small desert animals. No one lives here. No one visits here. If you're there, you ain't making it out. A lot of us in the room feel like this sometimes. A lot of us in the room have gone through situations, and we're going through situations, and we feel like everything's dried up. We feel like everything's gone. We have no answer. We have no hope, and we're wondering, where are you, God, in the midst of all this? I've been there. I've gone to church and felt like this. I'm not sinful. There's nothing wrong with me, but I sit on the pew. I try to raise my hands. I try to talk to God. I'm trying to figure out what's going on, and guess what? I'm not hearing from Him. I go and I read my Bible, and I seek after Him, and I can't find Him, and I can't figure it out. I've been there. I know what it's like to not even want to get out of bed sometimes. I know what it's like to not want to go to work. I know what it's like sometimes not to want to do life. I've been there. But you know what's interesting about this place? Once every 13 to 15 years, this thing happens. It happened this year, actually, July. This is where I came across this story. You ready? It looks like this. Go ahead. Once every 13 to 15 years, something changes. In an El Nino year, the winds shift, and mist from the ocean gets blown in from the Pacific. And it begins to settle onto the sands. And once every 13 to 15 years, the desert blossoms. Life returns. It's incredible. People flock by the thousands to come see these desert blooms because they only happen once, maybe twice in every lifetime. This incredible encounter of seeing God move in the midst of all that seems desolate and dry. You see, I stopped by this morning just to help you understand something. And I wanted you to be able to understand this verse. This is where I want to end today. Go ahead. 32 and 15, God gives a promise to Jeremiah. He says, there's going to come a day when life's going to return again. There's going to come a day when everything that seems desolate and broken and just absolutely failed is all going to be right again. And I stopped by this morning just to tell you, that promise is for you. That what you're going through today and what you're carrying this week and what you've been through this year and what's on your burden and what's on your back, I'm telling you, there's life on the other side of it. So here's how I want to end today. I want you to stand with me.
Hey everyone, Pastor Kevin here, and I'm so excited that you came to worship with us today. My prayer is that something in this service, whether through worship or the Word, changed you and gave you hope for the week. If you'd like to share that opportunity with us or whatever's happened in your life, there's a QR code that's going to appear on the screen. Just scan that code and it'll take you to our Connect card. We'll connect with you and you have chances to leave all kind of notes or prayer requests that we can gather together and pray with you about throughout the week. Thank you again so much for worshiping with us. We hope you have a great day.